Prime time is anytime. Subscribe to the Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Jeff Blair is pretty good at musical chairs, but this guy might be the best. Ben Ennis does job number 57 of the day, filling in for the Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Ennis filling in for Jeff Blair. Blue Jays and Texas Rangers this afternoon. 1:30 pregame on Sportsnet. 2 o'clock on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Marco Estrada getting the call against Yovani Gallardo. It's Blue Jays looking to wrap up this road swing at 7-1, sweep away two teams that were in the playoffs when they started playing the Blue Jays. And then they played the Blue Jays and didn't do well. Angels were swept away. As the Blue Jays scored 36 runs in those three games, and Blue Jays went double digits. They went ham on the Rangers yesterday as well, before they come home for a nice little homestand as well, and not so many off days coming up, which is nice because there were so many last week. Happy to be joined now by Stephen Brooks, Senior VP of Business Operations for your Toronto Blue Jays. As season ticket holders got the first crack at playoff tickets this week, next up, Flex Pack holders, and then the general public getting a shot on September 23rd. Steven, thanks so much for this. I was just joking around on Twitter that, like, you must, like, everybody that sells tickets for the Toronto Blue Jays and you as the leader of those people must just love coming to work. Not that you didn't before, but it must be pretty fun coming to work these days.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ben. Yeah, it's been a fun 3.5-4 weeks, and culminating in yesterday, putting postseason tickets on sale is a nice thing to do for everybody. So yeah, it's been fun. The folks in the ticketing department are busy manning the phones and all the planning as well that goes behind the scenes to get ready for a postseason run. It's fun for everybody.
If you want to follow Steven on Twitter, you can follow him at S Brooks Baseball, because you've kind of turned into like this Twitter star now, Steven. Have you always been on Twitter? Is this a new thing, or are people just discovering you now?
Yeah, well, you flatter me. I wouldn't certainly consider myself a Twitter star.
Superstar.
But right. But I think it's a good way to engage the fans. Like I said, we get a lot of questions, and if I could try to address some of those directly, I'm happy to do so. I've gotten on Twitter fairly recently and try my best to answer people's questions and concerns.
Feel free not to respond to the idiots. I don't. I block them. Talking to Stephen Brooks, Senior VP of Business Operations for the Toronto Blue Jays. So I mentioned season ticket holders got a shot midweek to buy playoff tickets. These are all going to sell out. Like, there's not even a question about it. What's the early returns? How long do season ticket holders have to get these playoff tickets? And do we have early results on how well they're selling? I imagine if you have season tickets, why wouldn't you buy up strips?
Yeah, they've got we sold a little over 7,000 yesterday, which is a great day. They've got until the season ticket holders do until September 1st to make their purchases. So, and at which point we get into the Flex Pack group. So sales were great. It was a very busy day here. We're obviously trying to pace this and try to get to all of these categories of ticket holders so that everybody's got a shot at getting postseason tickets. So we're monitoring that and we're managing that as we go, but it was certainly a very successful and busy day around here yesterday.
Yeah, you mentioned everybody getting a shot at these tickets, and obviously they're very expensive. Playoff tickets for any sport are expensive, especially when you're talking about one of the five most populous cities in North America, and having a team that people are so starved for playoff baseball in this city. But I mentioned general public sale, and you can buy individual tickets on September 23rd. Will there be tickets held back? Like, I know if flex packs, I know talking to people who have flex packs and season ticket holders, they're grabbing as many as possible. Is there a possibility that there's really not many available September 23rd, or are there some that are being held back to be sold as individual tickets?
We're trying to manage this inventory so that each group you know, there's a certain amount of tickets for each group, and that people in those groups can get access to tickets. So I'm confident that there will be tickets available by that time. How many is the question? You know, it's certainly going to be limited just by the definition of having a stadium with limited capacity. But there will, you know, there'll be tickets available, and like I said, we're trying our best to manage all of these categories in an orderly fashion as we progress through all these ticketing groups.
We know demand will be high. Do you guys have a plan as to how those general public tickets will go on sale? Will it be just a random draw where you put your name in? I know there's a lot of teams that do that, where you just put your name in and you sign up, you fill a sheet in online, and then it's just totally random, and that's the way people are picked for playoff tickets. Is that the route you're going to go?
No, I certainly know that some teams do it that way, and then, you know, sell strips. We looked at all of this, and it's going to be a general on sale, so when you're similar to opening day, for example, so when you're on the system, you know, the tickets are there. It's a single game purchase. So there is no lottery. There is no draw.
Okay. So people are just going to have to be quick with the fingers.
Quick with the fingers. and be patient, as I'm sure a lot of people on that particular day will be on the system.
Talking to Stephen Brooks, Senior VP of Business Operations for the Toronto Blue Jays, as a single game general public playoff tickets going on sale September the 23rd. And I know you guys have made more seats available as the demand has increased, and you're running out of room and opening up some limited visibility seats and
sure.
and whatever. And I know there's a possibility of standing room only tickets being sold for playoff games, so people can stand in the bar area in center field. How many of those are you planning on selling? And like, is that different than the regular season? Do you sell standing room only during the regular season?
No, in the regular season, that area is an open area for anybody who has a ticket, so they're free to wander out there. That will not be the same case for the postseason. It will be a ticketed standing room only proposition out there. There's roughly, you know, 300 or so tickets available out there. Now, I say roughly because we're working through media requirements of the league, and as you can imagine, as you progress through a postseason run, the requirements to house media, to house broadcast facilities increases. So that's a bit of a moving target in terms of space and logistics, but that's the rough number, but you know, I'm confident we can get to that level of number.
So I mentioned season ticket holders for 2015 have already gotten the opportunity to buy playoff tickets. Next up, Flex Pack. And I didn't mention that 2016 season ticket holders also get a bit of a window. When does that happen, and what's the process for that? If you're so hard up for playoff tickets, you can actually sign up for 2016 seasons and you get in before the general public. Is that right?
Yeah, that's September 10th. We will come with a communication in the coming weeks about how that will roll out. But the proposition would be a deposit on 2016 season tickets, you know, similar to what other teams do, and that would provide a postseason ticket access as well. So September 10th for that offer.
Do you have any numbers on 2016 season tickets and expectations, at least as far as going projecting ahead, and certainly. There is some that depends on the end of the regular season and how this team does in the postseason as far as clamoring and trying to get season tickets for 2016. What are your expectations for 2016?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, certainly it's going to increase, you know, with the excitement around the team, and if we make a good run into the postseason, it would increase that much more. So, we don't have any definitive numbers. We're working through all our plans for next year across the business as we speak. So, don't have any definitive numbers on that, other than to say I would suspect that demand is certainly going to increase and increase significantly.
Talking to Stephen Brooks, Senior VP of Business Operations for the Toronto Blue Jays. Last time we saw the Blue Jays at home, obviously the Yankee series was as sold out as it gets. And Tuesday night against the Oakland A's, there were 40,000 people there. They sold out Thursday, the afternoon game, 46,000, 44 on Wednesday. They return home tomorrow, three against the Tigers, three against the Indians, and three against the Orioles. Do you have any numbers as far as how close you are to capacity for all nine of those games. I think there are still tickets available. I know someone that bought some to the Indians game yesterday, but that's got to be getting close to sold out as well.
It's got a little bit to go, to be honest. The Detroit series is sold out. The Cleveland series, you know, we're into mid-30s on the Monday, and then pushing almost 30 for the Tuesday, Wednesday. So that, you know, that of all the series to come is the game with capacity still. But again, those are moving daily, and I would suspect that as we get, the team comes home this evening, and we get into the weekend, that'll start to move as well. Then obviously we get into September where, really all but two games, two Friday night games are in the 40s, if not sold out. So September is going to be a very exciting month. We're going to have a full house, I would suspect, for every game. And it's going to be a fun ride to the end of the season.
Yeah, so maybe that series against the Indians, the last chance for some people to get some good seats and go through the box office, because, it's going to be wild here as far as attendance figures are concerned down the stretch. Are you, because we know there's a season ticket holder base in the city. I don't know how strong it is. Maybe it's 15, 16,000. But, I mean, I don't know how much franchises rely on walk-ups. It seems like it's an incredible number of tickets that have been sold like days before games. Like that's pretty uncommon, isn't it, Steven?
Our walk-ups over the last, I'll say, 4 years have certainly decreased dramatically, which is a good thing, because it means people are buying in advance.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember one game, this may have been about 4 years ago, where we had a walk-up of 11,000 people, and the lines were down to Spadina and similar on the other side. And it was, as you can imagine, a box office trying to manage an unexpected flow of that many people is very, very challenging. So it's nice to see those walk-ups decrease, and it's nice to see people buy in advance. It is the best way. It is the way that I always encourage people to do. So, walk-ups have decreased, but attendance has gone up. So those, from a logistical perspective and managing the box office are good things.
Before we let you go, Steven, we saw so much excitement, not just in the Air Canada Centre for Leafs and Raptors playoff games, but outside at Maple Leaf Square. Is there anything planned as far as a viewing party for people who can't get their hands on playoff tickets? Is there somewhere where there's going to be a setup of a big screen, and maybe you can even buy tickets, maybe it's a licensed area even, where people can get together and watch the Blue Jays come playoff time?
Yeah, we're trying to work through those logistics and what our options are and what we could do. Certainly when the team is away, if we make it into a postseason and the team is away, that we would like to do something in stadium here on the video board along those lines. So we're working through those logistics, trying to figure out where we could do that, where we could handle that capacity, and hopefully we can manage to do something like that, because I certainly know that fans would embrace that.
And I think they did that in 92, 93 for road games, right? They opened up Skydome.
Yeah, that's my understanding, yep.
Yeah, so it's not something totally new to this city.
Yeah, and it all depends, on what our schedule will look like and what the availability of the building is for any other event. So, we'll play that by ear as this sort of rolls out, but we certainly look forward to doing something along those lines.
Exciting times coming up, Steven.
Thanks. Absolutely is.
Thanks so much for this. And go back to the ringing phones that are just ringing off the hook.
Absolutely.
It's like a joke over there. Thanks.
It's great. Thanks a lot, Ben.
No problem. Steven Brooks, Senior VP of Business Operations for the Toronto Blue Jays. That's a gig, right? It's a gig at the worst of times, even when it was difficult to draw fans and there was 15, 16,000 in cavernous Rogers Centre. It would have been a good gig. Everybody wants a gig like that, working for a Major League Baseball team. But how'd you like to have that gig when you can't stop people from buying tickets? I'm surprised that the Indian series is not at a higher capacity. The Tiger series, you said, sold out. It's a weekend series. I get that. And I get that midweek series are more difficult. With you got a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday series against the Indians, which aren't exactly a draw. But Tuesday against the Oakland A's. August 11th, they had 39,381. 44,000 on a Wednesday. Thursday afternoon, which actually do pretty well usually because it's kiddies, get down to the ballpark. Sold out crowd, 46,000. Their biggest crowd of the season. So, I don't know. Maybe I'll have to check out that Indian series. Is that Labor Day? No, it's not. Labor Day is a week later than that. So, yeah, still an opportunity to see the Blue Jays regular season-wise and playoff tickets becoming available rather soon as well. 1116 Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Annis filling in for Jeff Blair. Happy to be joined now by John Breach, NFL writer for CBSSports.com. And John, thanks for doing this. There's a couple of different places I want to go, but I want to start with Russell Wilson, who's kind of changed in people's minds, I feel like. And this story happening recently about him believing that this miracle water cured his what could have been a concussion in that playoff game against the Green Bay Packers. He's selling it now as his, I don't know, his public appeal kind of changed. I mean, he'll still have his fans, and certainly in Seattle they still love him, and maybe the religious sect is never going to waver on that. But this is a little untoward to me.
Ben, you know what's crazy is this Russell Wilson offseason totally reminds me of like Tom Cruise circa 2004, 2005 when he was jumping on Oprah Winfrey's couch and wouldn't stop talking about Scientology. And eventually it felt like it got to the point where his handlers were just like, look, Tom, we just want you to act. We don't want you talking about stuff except for acting. And if it's not acting, we don't want people asking you about it. And that almost seems where Russell Wilson's headed with this offseason, where he's had, you know, not only the recovery water, but he also had that interview in July where he said that God talked to him in the NFC title game and that he had challenged him with those interceptions and the Super Bowl. And he is almost becoming a caricature of himself at this point. I mean, like you said, there's going to be fans that love him. He's been to two straight Super Bowls. And, you know, he's successful. And so if he wasn't successful, this would be even worse. So it has been an absolutely crazy offseason with this guy.
It is. And you usually see athletes stay away from like politics and religion. Michael Jordan famously said Republicans buy sneakers too, right? Like that's if you're trying to appeal to advertisers, if you're trying to get your next advertising buck, your next shoe deal, maybe it's not the best idea to take a side here, but I guess maybe Russell Wilson's so devoted in his beliefs that he can't help it. I got to figure though that somebody with the Seahawks is telling him, hey, like, do you really have to? Like, is this entirely necessary?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if he's been asked to tone it down a couple times, but like you just said, he's so his beliefs are so strong, he's not going to listen to that. That's just who he is. And the other part is, if he did tone it down, he would probably lose a giant segment of what makes him popular, and then he'd just be left with, you know, Seahawks fans, and so all of a sudden he's not a national star. Maybe he's just a regional star. So I do think, as loud as he is with his religion on the field, it's a big part of why he's popular, because, you know, there are a lot of religious people out there that really admire him and like that he's successful, because, you know, their other person, I guess Tim Tebow would have been kind of the poster child for that before, and he just hasn't been successful. So now they have someone to get behind in Russell.
Do you believe in nanobubbles?
You know what? I don't yet, but as soon as I get my hands on a bottle of that recovery water, we can talk again, and I will let you know for sure.
It's I don't know what it goes for, like $6 a bottle. It's expensive, but if you've suffered a concussion, maybe it's the only way to recover. Talking to John Breach, he's an NFL writer for CBSSports.com. Washington professional football team, they still have that name, but they're constantly in the news. And preseason, the conversation, I feel like every preseason, is about who's going down and how do we limit the preseason and how do we limit injuries. And I don't know if there's an answer to that, because the starters don't play that much, but still we find significant injuries to significant players on teams that are not insignificant. Washington is not immune from this. Junior Gallette, the latest to go down with a torn Achilles, we expect. There's nothing official on that. Doesn't look good, though. I don't know what the expectations were for that team, but that seems like a big, big loss for them.
Yeah, it's almost – I mean, Washington was bad last year without Junior Gallet. So basically their defense doesn't take a step forward or step backward because we saw what they could do last year without him in the lineup. And now he spends the last 3 weeks of training camp. They probably said, hey, we like what he's doing out here. He looks good. We got him at a bargain. And now all of a sudden he's not out there. So now if you're Washington, you're like, God, our defense is going to be just as bad as it was last year. And, you know, especially with all this RG3 drama going on over the past couple weeks, if I'm a Washington fan right now, I just am saying to myself, there is no hope. And I'm thinking about maybe just locking myself in a closet for the entire football season.
That's a good call. Because RG3 suffered a pretty big hit and possible concussion, head injury, to say the absolute least. And all accounts are he's going to be ready to go opening day. But what is it about this guy? And I know part of it is he's a quarterback that likes to get outside of the pocket and takes a little too much time, and he needs to work on that, and his internal clock needs to change a little bit. But there's also, I mean, some of the blame has to go to that offensive line in Washington, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I know there was a little hoo-ha this week because Washington coach Jay Gruden decided to keep RG3 in the game. Maybe he should have pulled him in the second quarter. But, you know, if I'm Gruden, here, my thought process is, hey, look, this is the offensive line that RG3 has to play behind during the regular season. So I need to know he can last through two quarters. You know, keeping your quarterback in for the first series of the second quarter is not an unheard of in the second week of the preseason. I mean, Andy Dalton played almost the whole first half. Jameis Winston played two series on Monday night into the second quarter with the Buccaneers. So it's not crazy to do that. And you know, it's not Gruden's fault technically that his line looks so bad. So I don't really fault him for that. But as for the RG3 stuff, there does just all drama just follows this guy around. And it feels a lot like he just doesn't get along with his coaches. I don't think him and Jay Gruden have a real tight relationship.
What has happened to him? Because everybody's trying to figure it out, John. Robert Griffin III looked so good in that first year and the playoff game. And is it easy enough? Is it simple enough to say that injury totally derailed him, the second one in his career, to the knee and the recovery? Like, is that simplifying it too much?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it is. It absolutely seems like a combination of that, and maybe he hasn't been able to 100% mentally come back from that injury. And so you kind of take that where if you start playing a little more timidly because you're afraid to get injured again, or you're just not as strong as you were before you got injured, those two things right there will just kill you, especially in the NFL where guys are moving at like 200 miles an hour and the defense is just coming at you. You know, if you don't believe in your skills, then you're in trouble, and that just seems like what one of the issues is with RG3.
Talking to John Breach, NFL writer for CBSSports.com. The Dallas Cowboys have a big following all over North America. I think they're still America's team, technically, at least in name only. They suffered their key defensive injury already. Orlando Scandrick out for the season with ACL and MCL tears. How does that affect that team going forward to this upcoming NFL season?
Yeah, that's a huge loss. I mean, that's one of the biggest losses of the preseason so far. Because when you look at a team like, say, the Packers, they lose Jordy Nelson. Well, that's a big loss, but you still have Aaron Rodgers, and Aaron Rodgers is going to find receivers to get the ball to. Now, with the Cowboys, there's really no coming back from a defensive injury because you're talking about a cornerback who was a full-time starter for the last few seasons, and you can't just replace that because there's no – it's not like you can move a linebacker or a safety over there. You need another corner, and there just aren't any corners out there with Scandrick's talent. So it's not like you can just go sign someone. So that is definitely going to be an issue for the Cowboys moving forward, especially when you're in a division with – Odell Beckham Jr. and Victor Cruz, and you have to play them twice a year. Obviously, the Eagles offense, you have to see that twice a year. So this could be a real ugly one for Dallas, and you know, maybe it makes the Eagles the favorite in the NFC East.
Reading your story on CBSSports.com about the four new playoff teams you expect to be there, every single year there's four new playoff teams in the playoffs. Miami Dolphins, one of those teams, and Of course, in these parts, we pay extra close attention to the AFC East because a lot of Buffalo Bill fans here. And certainly there's still some question marks about the Patriots and how many games Tom Brady will be permitted to play and whether at some point they regress ever, even though we were talking about them last year regressing and then they won the freaking Super Bowl. But then the Dolphins go out and sign the biggest name free agent in the offseason and in Ndamukong Suh, and they already had a pretty good defense with Cam Wake there. I imagine if the Dolphins are making the playoffs, Buffalo Bills have no shot of making the playoffs.
Yeah, my big concern with the Bills, and really the Jets too, you look at those teams, and they're kind of similar. I look at their defenses, and I'm like, those are stacked. Those are playoff potential defenses. Then you turn it around, you look at the offense, and you know, I try to talk myself into, hey, Matt Castle or E.J. Manuel or Tyrod Taylor can get to the playoffs, but that's not easy to do. And so I think that absolutely is the big issue with the Bills. We're 3 days, 2 days away from their week three preseason game, which is the important one. And they don't even have a starting quarterback yet. So, you know, that's only going to give whoever is the starter 2 weeks. And that's if Rex Ryan were to name him, like, say, this Monday. Only it's 2 weeks to kind of get acclimated with that system. And I think this LeSean McCoy injury, it has to be disconcerting because he's the guy that that offense was going to revolve around. Rex Ryan has been talking about for the past 2 months, all he's going to do is run the ball. He's going to have the biggest running playbook in the history of mankind. Well, you don't have your horse, your running back that's going to be getting the ball the whole time. That's going to kind of mess up with that plan. And so, yeah, you also have good receivers in Buffalo, but you just don't know who's going to get them ball. Or even if they can get those receivers the ball, you know, obviously Matt Castle and Tyrod Taylor aren't on par with Tom Brady. And I wouldn't even say close on par with Ryan Tannehill, who's just an average quarterback.
It's a situation where we've heard Buffalo Bills talk about being in quarterback purgatory. Might be worse than purgatory at this point, but apparently the Sammy Watkins injury, not a big deal because LeSean McCoy called it an Allen Iverson injury, which is not really an injury, where they're just trying to keep their horse in the barn, make sure he's ready to go week one of the season. Could be one of the most interesting divisions in all of football to watch this upcoming season. John, thanks so much for this. Really appreciate it. And we'll share some nano bubbles one day, okay?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Ben.
No problem. There's John Breach, NFL writer for CBSSports.com. When we come back, more NFL talk. Because you demand it. You require it. Jordan Heath Rawlings will join me, deputy editor of Sportsnet magazine, sportsnet.ca as well. He will join me in studio. Also, we have your lineup for the Blue Jays and their series finale in Arlington this afternoon, broadcast starting at 2 o'clock on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, 1:30 on Sportsnet. Bit of a surprise that Troy Tulowitzki starting day game after a night game, but so many off days, like I'm totally fine with him starting, but I know John Gibbons and the Blue Jays were going to try and protect him a little bit with the injury history and the playing on turf at home. Today will not be that day because he is in the lineup. He's the DH, though. He's the DH and leading off. So this is your day where you get Pennington and Goins in the lineup at the same time. Cliff Pennington hitting eighth, Ryan Goins hitting ninth. So Edwin Encarnacion playing first base today, so you don't have a Smoke or a Colabello in the lineup. Tulo, Donaldson, Bautista, Encarnacion, like always. Deonner Navarro, obviously, in their day game after a night game as well for Russell Martin, doing the catching. Kevin Pillar and Ben Revere in left field, batting seventh as well. But more NFL talk coming your way in just a second. Jordan Heath Rawlings is here. I'm looking at him right now. And he just flipped me off. What? Why did he do that? Seems unnecessary. Ben Anna's filling in for Jeff Blair at Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Jeff Blair loves to commute. Let him join you on yours. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. On demand. Now more of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
/11:38, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Ben Ennis filling in for Jeff Blair on The Jeff Blair Show. Jeff Blair is here. Jeff Blair. He'll be doing the Baseball Central program, which you can also see on Sportsnet 360 at noon. I assume Kevin Barker's here, although usually he's poking his head around here. I haven't seen him yet. Oh, really? Apparently, producer Travis McKenzie tells me he has popped in a couple times. I haven't noticed him. Usually he stares laser beams into my eyeballs through the glass. Oh, apparently he's in the other room flexing, probably while drinking an extra, extra, extra large coffee, his fifth of the day. Not judging, though. I need coffee as well. Happy to be joined now by Jordan Heath Rawlings. He's the deputy editor of Sportsnet magazine, sportsnet.ca. And I read here he's in studio. And that's true. There he is. Hi.
Hi. Right next to you.
Yeah. We'll be together again for Sportsnet magazine live again on Saturday as well. So we'll save the good stuff for that. Let's talk about the Sportsnet magazine NFL preview, which is available now digitally. When does the magazine come out?
The magazine is out today. If you're a subscriber, it's in the mail now. You'll have it in a couple days. And if you want it right now, go to the App Store, Android, Google Play, wherever you get your digital mags.
There is nothing like the physical magazine. Like, it just feels right. I'm holding it right now. You don't know. I could be lying to you because this is radio, but I am actually
He's really holding it. Yeah. I see it.
I mean, you could be lying too, but that's fine. So there's a lot of... A lot of storylines going into the NFL season, like there are every year. But I think more so than any other year, there's a head coach in the forefront of everybody's mind when they think about what to look for this year. Because usually there's, hey, oh, can such and such a player build off a good season a year ago? Can such and such a team move forward? There's pressure on this team, on that team. But I don't know if I've ever seen anything like what's going on with the Philadelphia Eagles and Chip Kelly, Jordan.
Yeah. What's he doing? Nobody can really make sense of the offseason that they've had. It's been a series of whirlwind moves ever since he took over the personnel decisions in February. He's basically been remaking the team. And the way he's done it is so different from conventional NFL wisdom, from what other coaches would do, that I don't think anybody really knows what to expect from the Eagles this year.
And they get Tim Tebow as well. Like, to just throw log on the fire, right?
Why not? You got Riley Cooper. You got Tim Tebow. You got rid of LeSean McCoy.
Right. It's a bad look. That's one of the major storylines of this offseason is how many players have exited that scene in Philadelphia and then gone on to say that maybe Chip Kelly is racist. And then some have walked that back and some have the understanding that maybe he's still just got that college coach mentality where you can control unpaid laborers instead of millionaires. And maybe it's a little more difficult for him. But how much, like, what does he have to do this year to keep his job? Is he around for next year if this team doesn't make the playoffs?
I think he might still be just because it's the first year of him having total personnel control. He's definitely under pressure to show that these moves can work, which is really weird when you think that, you know, he's actually been very successful since he's come to the NFL. And I personally expect them to push Dallas for the division. It's going to come down to those two. It's going to come right down to the wire, I think. And more than anything, I'm just extremely excited to see how the heck DeMarco Murray does in Philly with two other running backs now behind him, spending a ton of money on a position that most other teams are buying as cheaply as they can.
Well, that's the thing, right? DeMarco Murray has a great year with the Cowboys last year, and we look at the Cowboys, and most people do, that offensive line as being maybe the best in football. Are we going to learn something like how good DeMarco Murray really is? Although the Eagles, I guess, have a pretty good offensive line. It doesn't stack up to the Cowboys, though, does it?
Well, they had a good offensive line. Then they got rid of two-fifths of it. And Evan Mathis is now gone. And he was, by all accounts, the best part of that line. They will have a running game. The question is why they felt the need to pay $51 million for their running game in the offseason when everybody else is just sliding in rookies, you know, working with zone schemes and trying to make it work because they know that money is better spent elsewhere now.
Well, what's going on there, too? Because the Eagles seem to be this team that whatever the situation, they're going to go the opposite of conventional wisdom, right? Because you said, and I agree with you, and it's clearly the case that you move on from running backs when they start to get paid because they break down and they're not entirely interchangeable. Like, there's a few game changers, right? And there's guys that are better than others. But here we go. The Eagles are throwing that on its head because they go out and get DeMarco Murray. Plus the whole running as many plays as possible. It really does seem like whenever there's an opportunity, Chip Kelly's just going to run the other way.
Yeah, he's just going to, I mean, in one sense, it's kind of something that you might have seen back in the Moneyball days of baseball when Billy Beane was first doing his thing and nobody else had quite figured out what he was up to. So there was a whole lot of second guessing of what he was doing. And, you know, whenever you have a coach or a general manager doing unconventional things in sports, it basically always comes down to first he does them, then everybody says, what the bleep are you doing? And then he either wins or he's gone. So, you know, Chip Kelly's got this year, maybe next year if this team shows something, you know, to prove that this can work. The most telling thing about him, I think, is one quote in the story was an unnamed Eagles player who says, it's not racism, it's not dislike, he just views players totally as commodities.
Which is, I mean, it's hard to fault him, really. Like, as far as dealing with people, like, that's not great, but you're running a business here, and it makes sense, right? Like, these, what's the average lifespan of a player in the NFL?
Three years.
And he's going to be canned if it doesn't work out, so...
No, it makes sense. It's just not going to make him the most likable guy. And when you're a coach and you need to motivate these guys, that might have something to do with it. I can see a GM or a personnel director making those calls.
Talking to Jordan Heath Rawlings, deputy editor for Sportsnet magazine, sportsnet.ca. The magazine hitting newsstands today. It's the NFL preview. It's been available digitally already. Talking about the NFC East and didn't mention Giants and... You know, some of their players have their fingers blown off in firework accidents. Like, that's tough.
It's a bad off season. Bad look.
it's a tough one, man. It really is.
Don't play with fire.
And it's also difficult to evaluate Eli Manning, isn't it? Because he's got the two Super Bowls, right? And those teams were incredible. And yes, he made big plays at the end of them. One of them aided by a helmet catch that may go down as one of the top five catches.
Both of them have unlikely catches
right. That
sealed the game for him.
And those are the only playoff wins he has in those 2 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, he won the games to get to the Super Bowl in those years. But yeah.
Yes.
Otherwise, not much. It'll be fun this year, though, because he has three good receivers. I mean, he has Odell Beckham, who is a superstar. And assuming he can stay healthy this season, you know, I feel like there's every reason he'll prove that was not a fluke. And he's one of the best three or four receivers in the NFL. He also has Victor Cruz coming back, who was an excellent receiver before he really messed up his knee. That was a nasty injury to watch. So it'll be interesting to see how he can come back from that. And Reuben Randall gets overlooked, and he is a big, speedy weapon that can win jump balls. And so it'll be fun to see, because he's mostly been a player who had, you know, one, maybe two weapons to kind of rely on. And this is Eli Manning with everything at his disposal. And so maybe he can hang with Peyton now.
Yeah, let's talk about his brother, Peyton Manning, because I know he has the Super Bowl under his belt, and you can't take that away from him. But if he retired tomorrow, I mean, the storyline would be he did not produce in the playoffs. He did not come through in clutch moments like a guy of his skill set and with his other regular season numbers should have. Is that going to change this year? Does he not have to do much with that team?
He needs to be Joe Flacco.
Yeah.
Joe Flacco, Eli Manning, and Peyton Manning is the game managing approach that you honestly need to take with a 40-year-old quarterback who looked like he was kind of shot down the stretch. Now, he says that was all due to his torn quad muscle. He couldn't plant properly, so his footwork was all off. And maybe it was. There's been some good reports out of training camp. But my argument is that, yeah, he just needs to take care of the football, because the Broncos, to me, have the best defense in the NFL. They got a quality run game. They now have a coach that knows how to use a quality run game. And they have an incredible pass rush. And they hired Wade Phillips to run it. And Wade Phillips loves to blitz. So it's going to get messy for other teams in Denver.
Are we just – is Peyton, in your opinion, just waiting for that one more Super Bowl, or at least deep run, maybe Super Bowl appearance, and then he's going to call it quits?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to speculate on what Peyton Manning might or might not do, but it certainly looks like, you know, he's getting to the end of the line, and if he had a championship, it would just be a perfect moment, and I think he'd be a fool not to take it.
Robert Griffin III used to be good, not so much anymore, and part of that is you play on a crappy field and you have a crappy knee and it craps
crappy
out.
Coach, crappy doctors, crappy team.
And you have a crappy team nickname and all that. It's not good. Is basically what I'm trying to say. In the magazine, there's an article comparing the careers of Andrew Luck and Robert Griffin III, and that was a discussion, not just a draft day time going 1-2, but that first season, it was a legitimate conversation you could have.
And RG3 was the offensive rookie of the year that season. Beat Andrew Luck.
Right, and you could have said, well, I mean, this is never going to end. Why would he just all of a sudden fall off the face of the earth? And then the knee explodes, and he's never the same since. And Luck is, boy, if you were starting a franchise tomorrow, he might be the guy.
He would be the guy.
It's well,
it's him or Aaron Rodgers.
Right. Yeah, him or Aaron Rodgers. Right.
And I'd take Luck.
Which is a bold statement. But those two, like, it's incredible where we've come, Jordan, considering that season not that long ago.
It was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's just, it seems so weird because everything that's gone right for Andrew Luck really went perfectly. You know, despite no running game, he just managed to throw for 4,000 yards every year. All his receivers worked out, even ones that kind of had some question marks on them. The coaching's been great. And, you know, he's thrown some bad interceptions in big games, and it hasn't cost them those games. Now, I mean, they got stomped by the Patriots last year and then immediately had their victory kind of, or their loss kind of saved for them by the fact that, you know, those balls are a little bit overinflated. But it's just like every break that he needed to catch, he's caught it. And literally everything that could have gone wrong to RG3 has gone wrong. From, you know, we mentioned the coaching, we mentioned the knee, you know, he's been rushed back. And then when he rushed back, he played tentatively. And, you know, even just, he's finally looking good and feeling good, and they throw him in a preseason game, and the line is crap, and he gets sacked, and he's out of the game after, like, five passes. Just, like, what does the guy have to do? It's the point where even if you weren't a supporter at first, you got to kind of feel bad for the guy now.
Oh, definitely. And despite the fact that he's a little brash, and, of course, he's got self-confidence, I don't know if you can play that position without that. Before we let you go, speaking of that position, all eyes, as far as rookies are concerned, are going to be on, naturally, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. Who do you think, it maybe just this season, it's harder to project down the line, and you're talking about a Bucs team that was rancid last year and a Titans team that wasn't so great either, but who do you think is going to have the better year?
The better year this year, I would put my money on Winston, and it wouldn't even be that close. I actually like Mariota as a guy that could easily be better than Winston in the long haul, but Tampa just has weapons. You know, they have Mike Evans, who showed that he's a top number one receiver last year. They have Vincent Jackson, who's, you know, still big, still fast, age 32, knows how to catch the football. They have Safarian Jenkins, who is a good young tight end. And Mariota's got not much to throw to. He's got Kendall Wright, maybe Justin Hunter. You know, it's tough. So I think just by the virtue of the guys who are catching the football, I give it to Winston.
He's Jordan Heath Rawlings. He's the deputy editor of Sportsnet magazine, sportsnet.ca as well. The magazine's available now. It's the NFL preview. You can get it digitally or in actual physical magazine form, which I'm holding right now. Thanks for this,
Jordan. You got to subscribe to get that.
Okay, so
go
subscribe. Subscribe. Do it. You're going to waste your money anyways. Suspended on Sportsnet magazine. That'll do it for me. I'll be back on Monday filling in for Jeff Blair again. But don't worry, you can get your Jeff Blair fix. He's coming up with Kevin Barker, Baseball Central. Now Kevin's staring at me creepily. I'm Ben Ennis. You can follow me on Twitter, @BenEssNet. See you next week.